Hello there, and welcome to the Cinema Cafe podcast, the film podcast by the fans for the fans. This is episode 98, and my name is Joshua Liu, and I would like to thank everyone for joining us. As we review new movie releases, talk some film news, and share general love for all things cinema, there's a lot of love to go around, and we want to share. Now, if you have any comments or feedback, you can always reach us at cinemacafepodcast@gmail.com. Also, remember to review the show on iTunes and check out our blog at cinemacafepodcast.blogspot.com. So as you may have heard in the beginning, I mentioned Wee Penny will be joining me for the main feature. We have two movies that we want to review for you this week. So she'll be joining us, me a little later, rather, to talk about those two main movie reviews. But before we get to that, we are two episodes. This is episode 98, two episodes from the big 100. That means we've been doing this show for quite a bit of time because it was on and off for a bit. We took a little hiatus. I think I looked back at the first show, and I believe it aired around October 2008. I still remember that show. I think we reviewed Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist. We reviewed a few movies from the Tribeca Film Festival, but the Lincoln Center New York Film Festival. And yeah, it was a shaky start, but here we are almost 100 episodes later, so we're going to do something a little special. I'm not sure what it'll be. I'm sure it'll consist of maybe some kind of top 10 list of something, but we'll see that. But this is episode 98, and since I am flying solo, there's not going to be any movie talk back this week, but I do want to talk quickly mention that the New York Comic-Con is coming up next week, October 10, 11, 12, 13, or 11, 12, 13, 14. I think that sounds better. Thursday through Friday at the Jacob Javits Center. So there's a lot of cross-pollination between interests of comic books and film, especially these days with Avengers now becoming the third highest-grossing film of all time, right behind Titanic and Avatar. So, you know, there is buzz there these days. And, you know, I am a big comic book geek, I'm a big anime geek, and a big film geek. So I'm really looking forward to New York City Comic Con. I'll be taking 2 days off from work, so I can go all 4 days. It's not a bad train ride, like 40-minute train ride to the Jacob Javits. So I'm really looking forward to spend all day there, hopefully attending panels, and, you know, learning a lot about movies. Maybe I'll attend the Walking Dead panel this year. I did that last year, 2 years ago, in the first year it aired. We'll see. But I do believe I'm going to go get a chance to see the new Silent Hill movie, Revelation, at the panel, the premiere screening. So hopefully I get a chance to see that. Now, with that out of the way, I want to talk about a few movies before we get to our feature-length film reviews. The first movie I want to talk about is a movie called Being Elmo, A Puppeteer's Journey. Now, this is a 2011 documentary. It's directed by Christopher Marx. And it's the story of Kevin Cash. Who's Kevin Cash? I didn't know about Kevin Cash. You don't know about Kevin Cash before this, I'm sure. But he's the puppeteer and voice behind the famous Sesame Street Muppet, Elmo. Now, the film follows Cash around his early years in Baltimore, Maryland, and how he came to meet Kermit Love and Jim Henson and the phenomenon that is Elmo. Now, I've been wanting to see this documentary for quite some time, as I, of course, like many other kids, grew up watching Sesame Street, and my love for Jim Henson and his work literally knows no bounds. I love Labyrinth, I love Dark Crystal, I love the Muppets, I love Jim Henson. If you get a chance, they released a graphic novel based on a shot screenplay by Jim Henson called Tale of Sand. It's a screenplay that they didn't have the technology, and I'm sure the budget to do back in the 70s, and then sadly he's dead now, but they published it as a graphic novel, and it is absolutely beautiful and wonderful, like all Jim Henson works. So check that out if you get a chance, called Tale of Sand. But going back to this movie, this doc is nothing short of eye-opening and amazing. Just watching Cash being a rare and brilliant black puppeteer, as he takes the viewer along on his journey of how he came to love puppets and want to be a puppeteer, and the many influential people who shaped his life, and how incredibly respected and famous he is, even though he could, you know, walk down the street without Elmo and literally no one would know who he is. There's a great shot of him walking in Times Square, literally right by Elmo, a giant Elmo, and right in front of I'm sure Sesame Street or a Muppet store, and nobody recognized Kevin Cash. Who is Kevin Cash? The film is incredibly heartwarming and in a lot of ways life-affirming, if a bit creepy at times. Just seeing Elmo while Cash is holding him in the same shot hugging kids it kind of creeped me out a bit, but this is a nearly flawless look in a life that is very little known, and shows humanity behind Henson and many of his collaborators. Now, I didn't really grow up watching Elmo, as he came to prominence with Kevin Cash a little later in my life, but a behind-the-scenes look in the Sesame world is worth any price of admission, so I give this one a DVD buy, or check it out now on Netflix Instant Watch. The second movie I want to talk about is a little-known film called Wild Target. Now, this is a 2012 comedy thriller. It's directed by Jonathan Lynn and stars Bill Nighy, who plays an assassin by trade, facing what all assassins face, an existential crisis. As he searches for meaning, he is hired to kill a beautiful and free-spirited thief, played by Emily Blunt, and instead of killing her, ends up saving her life. He goes on the run with her and a new sidekick, played by Rupert Grint, I don't even know, the guy from Harry Potter, as they try to keep alive and find their places in the world. Now, this is a very low-key and by-the-numbers British farce, only saved by its likable cast. If you want to see a very British crime comedy thriller, then this is a perfect example of one. It has its moments, has its charms, but in the end feels a bit empty and overly written, as things just fall into place a little too easy. Nye's assassin is fantastic, though, as an unfeeling mama's boy, but again, this is because it's Bill Nighy, and Bill Nighy is a fantastic actor. Blunt is okay, but I actually really liked Rupert Grint as the trainee, kind of like up-and-coming naive assassin. It's a darkly comedic role that plays with genre conventions, and I thought he was fantastic in this film, not like, you know, coming out of a shell of the Ron Weasley role that he did in Harry Potter. And overall, this won't blow your mind, but if you like these kind of assassin comedies with a darker edge, this may be worth a watch. So I give this one a Netflix Instant Watch, which of course you can catch it there. The third movie I want to mention is a documentary called Page One Inside the New York Times. Now, this is a 2011 documentary directed by Andrew Rossi, and follows and interviews a group of journalists for the New York Times and other medias as they discuss the collapse of the newspaper industry and the changing of what journalism means in a digital tweet-first, post-first kind of world, all the while following the Times' relations with WikiLeaks and other breaking news sites. Now, I'm a big journalist fan. I studied journalism, that is my major, that is my degree. And in the sense that I love stories about journalism and the romanticized view of it. This documentary is the hard-biting reality of a world where people care more about what celebrity did rather than what's going on in the world today and what is going on in the national landscape. A world where people read a tweet and an editorial post rather than an actual journalistic story. I love journalism, and I've barely read a newspaper in quite a while. This document is truly unprecedented look into the men and women who run the New York Times, and the sad truth they face. The fear of the unknown as the newspaper industry faces its biggest crisis since almost its inception. This is a really well-made and well-done documentary with fascinating looks into what makes a group of journalists tick, as it follows, you know, this loud, abrasive, and hard-living writer named David Carr, who feels right out of the Hunter S. Thompson journalism school of journalism. And if you like documentaries that shed light on little understood industries, if you want to see what is going on with the newspaper industry and how they're trying to change with the times and the importance now more than on real investigative journalism, you know, check out this one. I give this one a DVD rental, or check it out on Netflix Instant Watch. Now, my internship in college, and one of my first jobs right out of college, was working for the Boston Globe. I did obituaries, obviously, since I was brand new, young, up and coming, work your way from the below, not necessarily the mailroom, since I had a degree, but working from the obits up. And I have to say, this is a sad reality of the newspaper industry, this look. And even though I graduated at a time where digital publishing wasn't, you know, established yet or even known in the world yet, it was still really hard to keep a job. And when I moved back to New York, I couldn't really move into another newspaper, find another job in the newspaper, especially one that paid well, because honestly, trust me, journalists do not get paid well. So I moved out of that. And, you know, while I love journalism stories, I was never enamored with the life of the journalist. But I love watching films about that. So if you like to watch that films about that and are tired of the romanticized view of journalism, how they're all so beautiful and good-looking and hard-hitting truth and that's all they care about, then check out Page One inside the New York Times and the most established newspaper in New York and one of the most established papers newspapers around the world, and how you can see how, sadly, it's fallen apart. The journalists are still trying their hardest, but a lot of readers don't care. All right, and the last film I want to mention before we get to our feature film review is a movie called IQ. Now, this is a 1994 romantic comedy directed by Fred Shepsey of Roxanne and Mr. Baseball fame man. I love me some Mr. Baseball. Tom Selleck is fantastic in the movie and stars Tim Robbins as an auto mechanic who falls in love with a beautiful genius played by a still young but somewhat aging at that time, Meg Ryan. Now, Robbins teams up with her uncle, Albert Einstein, played by an amazing Walter Matthau, to trick her into thinking he's smart, as they all seek the meaning of the heart over the mind. Now, this film was a pretty big box office failure when it came out, barely making its money back, even to this day, and it's a big shame. I barely remember watching this film on late night TV of my youth, but IQ is just full of surprises, especially since I'm a rom-com fan. It's incredibly charming, as all the actors have such incredible, wonderful chemistry with one another. Robinson's mechanic, who tries to play smart to win his love, but is such a good nature and kind guy, he might be something of a savant. He is fantastic in here, and if anybody's seen the highly underrated and my favorite Coen Brothers film of all time, Hudsucker Proxy, you'll get Robin's role in here as well, because he plays the same exact character as he did in Hudsucker Proxy. Also, Meg Ryan as the beautiful mathematician who prioritizes the mind over the heart is fantastic. I mean, nobody does rom-coms, female leads in this modern day better than Meg Ryan. She is just absolutely fantastic here. And, you know, Walter Matthau as Einstein is just a bit of wonderful casting, eye-opening, and it's astounding. And, you know, this is just a good-natured, funny, happy, and overall lighthearted look at love and life. The most surprising thing about this film is how little known it is, even though it is pretty has a fairly big cast. If you like charming and happy films, check out IQ. There's wonderful math, wonderful charm, you know, and just wonderful period piece. And I just love these kind of quirky, kind of, you know, throwback kind of romantic comedies. So, yeah, I give this, it's just a happy film. And I give this one a DVD buy, or watch it now on Netflix Instant Watch. I'm sure you've been seeing a pattern these past few shows about mainly the movies I watch besides the feature-length film reviews are instant-to-watch ones, because that's the ones I mainly get a chance to see. But yeah, Netflix is shown having some fantastic films, so definitely check it out. All right, with that out of the way, let's get into our first feature-length film review, and it's one of my most anticipated. This show is going to be fairly big because it has two of my most anticipated films of the year. The first one we're going to talk about is a little ditty, a sci-fi throwback to 80s action films, and it's an American look at the famous British combo character. It's Dread 3D.
800 million people living in the ruin of the old world. Only one thing fighting for order in the chaos. Judges.
This drug's like nothing I've ever seen.
If we play this right, we can take the whole city.
Mom is controlling all the slow-mo production and distribution.
Rookie, you ready?
Yeah.
You look ready.
Fire!
Mama's not the law.
I'm the law.
I'm going in for you.
How do you plead? Noted.
Okay, now this is a 2012 comic book adapted action film. It's directed by Pete Travis of Vantage Point fame, I guess fame of that, and it's written by Alex Garland of 28 Days Later, Sunshine, and Never Let Me Go fame. Now, the film stars Carl Urban as Judge Dredd, a law enforcer given the power of judge, jury, and executioner in the vast dystopian metropolis of Mega City 1 that lies within a post-apocalyptic wasteland alongside, I guess it's like U.S. I think it's a Detroit to L.A. or something like that. Anyway, alongside rookie Judge Anderson, played by Olivia Thirlby.
Wrong. It's like Boston to D.C. or something like that.
You
are geographically challenged.
I am. I am that. Alongside rookie Judge Anderson, played by Olivia Thirlby, Dredd is forced to bring out order to a feared, I guess, and control 200-story slum and take down its resident drug lord, Mama. Played by Lena Headey. So, as you heard, Penny has joined me to talk about some Dredd 3D. Now, this is actually one of my most anticipated films. Because I'm a huge, huge, huge Judge Dredd fan. I'm a big fan of the comic book. And, you know, honestly, thankfully, this is not a sequel to the 1995 Stallone and Rob Schneider Judge Dredd movie. A movie where I seem to be the only person... exactly. Where I seem to be the only person on the face of the planet who actually enjoys it. And it's kind of like it's so bad, it's amazing kind of way. And now, this movie, Dredd 3D, takes the character of Judge Dredd back to its roots, the gritty enforcer of a city gone corrupt, dirty, and mad. He's a faceless monster in an uncaring world, epitomized that the viewer... by the fact that the viewer never sees his face, hidden behind his helmet at all times, a fact which drove fans mad about the 1995 film because within 10 minutes, Stallone already had his helmet off, and because you can't hide those good looks, honestly. So,
Keith Urban's quite a looker, and he kept that mask
on. But at that time, Stallone was a huge actor.
Well,
I mean, you and I love Carl Urban. Many people don't know who Carl Urban is, so it's okay. Ooh. Exactly. So yeah, I was really excited to see this film, and yeah, it's been on my radar for quite some time. Now, let's start at the beginning with the 3D, Penny. It's there, but I don't think it's utilized enough.
Yeah, I don't remember it much. Well, no, I do. I mean, with the drug slow-mo?
Yeah, the slow-mo.
That's the...
You saw the 3D effects of that?
Yeah.
A little. I mean, it would have been amazing if there was more blood effects used in 3D, like a kind of like a B horror movie, this perfect kind of movie for this. However, the final scene utilizes the 3D incredibly well, which makes me even sadder with the shards of glass.
Yeah.
Which makes me even sadder because it could have been used the same way throughout the film. But yeah, the 3D was okay, right?
Yeah.
Nothing really astounding. So this is a dark kind of throwback 80s action type action film. And if you like those kind of films, you'll be blown away. I was actually blown away by this film. I was expecting...
Really?
I was expecting a gritty and dark film.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And
What did you get?
And I got a gritty and dark film. Yeah, and I was like... Because, you know, as much as I like the original 1995 film, you're gonna be kind of worried because that left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths. And, you know, you're kind of worried that, you know, still an American studio...
It's gonna be the same type of deal.
Uniquely British character and, you know, turning him to, you know, like a comedic act kind of film like the original one was. But yeah, this is very surprising, and I actually enjoyed the, you know, the hell out of it. And it lived up to or exceeded my expectations. Now, Penny, you have no idea who Judge Dredd is. You've never seen the original movie.
Never seen the original. Don't know the
comic
book,
yeah,
nor
well.
Read the comic book.
So what do you think about
this? Went in with no expectations per usual.
Yeah.
And
you didn't even want to see this, I don't think, right?
I didn't care either way.
You like Carl Urban, though.
Yeah, so. It wasn't like, man, this looks so bad that I didn't want to see it. There's other films that make me cringe, but this wasn't it.
Okay.
But as I was watching it, it reminded me of the Indonesian movie that we saw.
Yeah, The Raid.
The Raid
Redemption.
Like, yeah, like only a few weeks back. I'm like, hey, was the Indonesian movie based on Judge Dredd? You're like, no, it's based on a video game. And I'm like, oh, okay. But then, I don't know, I guess all these kind of genres kind of mix together anyway. But, I mean, I did actually like it. I liked the idea of it. But that was one of the first things that came to mind. Because
yeah,
that was something that we
concept.
Saw. Really, right, the same kind of concept
storming
where you're storming a building that is, you know, on lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
And you're working your levels up to reach to the big boss lady, if you will.
Well, go
but on. Obviously, there was a lot of moments of just, you know, crazy violence and destruction.
Yeah,
which
and
was
what
you
I
know.
Think. What I think really worked about this film is that when you're talking about this kind of apartment complex, this 200-story
right.
apartment, it had its like. What's really good about this film is that the city had its own character, and the apartment
right.
had its own kind of character.
Right.
It's a wasteland of a world where there's whatever, like 90%
right.
unemployment
I mean,
rate.
It's like the
yeah.
ghetto.
Yeah, it's a one giant slum, and I like how the movie focused on that one kind of apartment.
Right.
And, like you said, like, the Raid Redemption, you know, because it honestly would have been hard.
Right.
To, you know, especially with costs and special effects and everything, to focus on the entire city if they try to show the city. But since they've just focused on, like, the single mega city complex, the viewer is immersed in the world. And, you know, everything feels claustrophobic and raw.
Right.
And I really like that effect. But I'm sorry, what else were you saying?
Well, this, at least with Judge Dredd, it made it very clear on its, you know, apartment complex or whatever it is, where there are people who work for Mama's gang, but then there are people who are just innocent bystanders that just, like, they're poor, they live in this area, just, you know, that's life circumstances, if you will. And, I mean, Nazis keep comparing it to the Indonesian film, but I kind of got lost in that, and I was like, why are, because it's, you know, you think it's a 20 apartment building, and you're like, well, why are all these people living here if they're not in a gang? Like, I would automatically thought everyone was bad. But anyway, that's kind of getting down to the nitty gritty of it. But I did like the way it was shot. I liked the story. I liked the character. I really thought I might see him without the helmet just because I wanted to see Keith Urban, Carl Urban.
Yeah.
But
I'm glad he did, because since the inception of the Judge Dredd comic to now, because the comic's still being released in 2000 AD, he's never taken off his helmet once. We've never seen his face.
Well, going into the movie, I didn't know that, mm-hmm. So I was just like, oh, is he ever going to take off his helmet? I guess not.
Yeah, he's the faceless law, the faceless judge, and the faceless executioner.
But I think one thing that you mentioned that they didn't really set in the movie was that Judge Dredd is, like, the best of
the
judges.
Yeah, he's the best judge.
And
they hint at it a little, but
but if you didn't know, you didn't catch it. Like, I kind of caught it, but not really. Well, not until you said it, I was like, oh, okay. Well, then, in hindsight, I remember this one remark someone said.
Because it's supposed to be like, oh, there's a judge. Holy crap, it's Judge Dredd! Run!
Right.
Like, it's supposed to be like that,
right.
You know, because he's the... Because the judges are judge, jury, and executioner, but they're the police.
Right.
And this is the old... This is Dirty Harry, you know what I mean? This is Bruce Willis in Die Hard. This is the ultimate cop, the ultimate judge, jury.
The
man who can literally take out a 200-part story complex by himself. So
no spoilers there. Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, really good film. Really, really incredibly bloody.
Mm-hmm.
Incredibly dark and gritty and rough. And
I think Anderson actually did a pretty good job. At some points, I was like, oh, gosh, she's kind of annoying. And she's like one of those characters that you've seen in random crappy TV shows.
But you need her because she's the heart of it. She's the only one with the actual character arc. Because Judge Dredd is Judge Dredd.
Right, he's like a robot.
Yeah.
Versus she has that human...
Yeah, she goes from this shy and nervous Judge Dredd to, you know, a judge. You know, all in by teaming up with Judge Dredd and learning the ropes. And, you know, Carl Urban channels this kind of inner Stallone way better than Stallone did in the film. And no one moment feels...
No one out-Stallone.
Yeah, no one moment feels hammy. As he plays the faceless embodiment of the law so well with his gruff
voice. Why do you call him Stallone? I mean, the character has existed before Stallone.
Yes, but I mean...
I guess you can't compare it to any other...
There's been no other movie. I can compare it to, like, you know what I mean? I can compare it to the comic character, but... Yeah, and, like, Olivia Thirlby as Judge Anderson was actually really good. And, she, like, again, she's the only character with a character arc. Lena Headey, I don't think they did a good job explaining how Mama...
Right.
This small...
Bad chick in 24.
Yeah, the small woman, you know, without really, like, any martial arts or, you know, any prowess and any skills, to be able to run and completely take over this entire 200-story apartment complex with multiple gangs inside and just control everything by herself, you know, later on. They didn't really do a good job explaining her character.
I agree.
All in all, a surprisingly fantastic movie. One that, while it can't wash away the memories of the 1995 film, is a brilliant homage and representation to a character that's been around since probably the 70s. So if you like your action movie gritty and raw, like Death Wish or kind of like Get Carter, these uniquely British 80s action films, you'll get a real kick out of this one. So I give this one a Bring Your Lunch From Home.
I think it's better than the 80s Death Wish.
I love Death Wish. But yeah, Bring Lunch From Home, because you do not want to miss this one. There's great gallows humor throughout that had me laughing at the most kind of improper tune moments. So yeah, absolutely love this film. So how about you, Penny?
Yeah, I mean, I really did like it, but I can't say it's for everyone, I feel like.
I agree.
Because it does have that...
If you like 80s action films, that's what it is.
Sure. And that's the thing, though. It's a very... to say it, but it is a very genre film because it's sci-fi.
Well, it is a genre film.
Right, it's
just
a sci-fi
comic
action
movie.
I don't know if it has that broad enough appeal.
If you like to enjoy movies, you'll enjoy this movie. If you're dead inside...
Okay. If you're dead inside. So I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to give it a matinee DVD rental. Just because I just don't think it might be for everyone, even though it was done very well.
Again, these are
dead
people...
Dead inside.
These people who... aren't
I'm not saying
one.
Not to watch it.
I don't want
to
talk.
I'm just saying you don't have to pay $11.50 for it.
$11.50 my butt.
Whatever.
3D was like $16.50.
Well, that's what I meant.
All right. With that out of the way, let's get into our second and final feature-length film review. And it's another one, again, as I mentioned before, there's two films I was really looking forward to this year. So that's why this is a great show for us. One was Dread 3D, and the other is this film. Oh, man, it's Rian Johnson. I love me some Rian Johnson. It's a sci-fi JGL action fest where he turns into Bruce Willis.
Weird.
It's Looper.
So you're me in 30 years.
So I'm staring into your eyes. It's too strange.
Your face looks backwards. Do you know what's going to happen? You done all this already as me?
I don't want to talk about time travel.
We both know how this has to go down. So why don't you do what old men do and die?
Why don't you just take your little gun out from between your legs and do it, boy?
In the future, time travel is outlawed, used only in secret by the largest criminal organizations. When they need someone gone, and they want to erase any trace of the target ever existing, they use specialized assassins like me, called Loopers.
You're a Looper?
You know what we do? And the only rule is never let your target escape, even if your target is you.
All right, now this is a 2012 sci-fi action film, and is written and directed by Rian Johnson of Brick and Brothers Bloom fame.
I thought you said he didn't write it.
Matt said that. He did write it.
Matt is such a dick.
Okay, I don't think anybody cares about that kind of conversation, but Matt was one of my friends we went to see the movie with, and stars Joseph Gordon-Levitt as Joe, a man living 30 years in the future, where time travel has been invented 30 years in his future. He works as a looper, a man hired by the mafia, who is paid to kill people they send back and dispose of all traces of the victim. However, one day, he has sent his future self to kill, played by Bruce Willis. Joe, or rather young Joe, must find his future self and kill him before the mob comes to collect. It's up to Joe and old Joe to face their present and past in order to change both of their futures.
I like that. Old Joe and young Joe.
Yeah, I mean, how else would you distinguish them? But
well,
so,
old Joe, Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
I guess
old Joe, Bruce Willis.
So, basically, this is Rian Johnson's third film. He's a bit of an enigma in the sense that he could do anything. His first film, Brick, one of my all-time favorite films. You know how obsessed I am with
high
Brick.
High School Noir.
Is a high school film noir where
Which
everybody
is
talks.
Weird.
Obviously, just starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt. He knows who his muse is. He's really good at that. The second film was a caper film. Brothers Bloom with
I really liked Brothers Bloom.
Yeah, I'm surprised because I thought Brothers Bloom was good, but for me, didn't hold a candle to Brick.
Oh, I love Brothers Bloom more than Brick.
All right, so that was a fantastic film. So here he comes up with a totally another genre film. In the sci-fi genre film.
But you know what? They're all so different.
That's what I'm saying.
Awesome.
That's what I'm saying.
So
like, he is such a unique director. In his first three films, they're already in three totally different genres. So, yeah, amazing. So, basically, this is Johnson's foray into the sci-fi world.
Is he, like, the next, I don't know. Who does very varied movies? David Lynch? No.
I mean,
no,
Lynch all does the same
kind
of films. Who are you thinking of?
Linklater?
Richard Linklater? Yeah, Richard Linklater does every single genre, basically. He's never done sci-fi, though. The thing is that... Which one?
The Sun one. No?
No, you're...
Danny Boyle
isn't that guy that you're talking... Richard Linklater doesn't do genres.
Scanner Darkly thing.
He did do Scanner Darkly. That is true.
Man, I'm good.
You know I love Richard Linklater anyway. Anyway, so this movie is all centered around the name Looper. It's about how life kind of like loops for these men, looping through drugs, looping through the present, looping through, you know, money, friends, and the future. When they know eventually they're going to have to close the loop, which means kill themselves. I find that actually fascinating,
right,
in the sense that since time travel kind of like scares the people still, the only ones that use it is the mafia.
Right. It's illegal.
It's illegal, outlawed in the future.
Once they created it, it's like, well, no.
Instantly illegal,
Instantly illegal. It's like, hey, we figured out what heroin is. Illegal. Yeah.
So the reason why they have to quote-unquote close the loop, reason why they have to kill themselves is because I actually read a fascinating article by Ryan Johnson, where he basically said the reason why they close it because they don't understand time travel yet, so they're afraid that if somebody else kills you in the future, like your future self, it might create somewhat of a paradox, so they make you kill yourself. Also, if somebody kills you, your future self, you gotta work alongside them, you know, even knowing that they killed your future self. So they think it's cleaner for you to close your own loop, you to kill your future self. To get out of the quote-unquote game. This is when they retire a looper. And I actually thought that was a fascinating concept.
But I don't understand why can't they just die. I mean, I understand that someone can just die in violence, but why don't you just let them live it out?
Well, I mean, like, that's because of the Rainmaker started making them close the loops.
Well, that's where I said that
at
the beginning.
Yeah, no, but I mean, like, all right. So anyway, I mean, this movie's actually pretty interesting because they gave Joseph Gordon-Levitt a lot of practical makeup where you almost won't recognize him.
But
he looks
so
like a JGL version of Bruce Willis. Yeah, I mean, his nose, hairline, chin.
I don't think anyone would have cared.
No, nobody would have cared.
Right.
Like I told you, like 16 again, where Zac Efron became Matthew Perry. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Matthew Perry wishes he looked like that.
Granted, yeah, but it's ridiculous. But you're like, you know what? Whatever.
Who cares? Right. It's a movie.
So, I mean, because the problem is that while I thought the effects were good, the thing is that you already know what Joseph Gordon-Levitt looks like.
Right.
And so he
if
looks
he was
kind
an
of,
unknown,
yeah,
then,
it'll be
then
different.
It'd be like, all right, whatever, we don't know what his face
but he looks
like
kind of plastic here.
Well, he does.
Like the robots in AI or
right.
like
it
a motion
capture
film. It
looks like he had a swollen
film.
Upper lip, and it's like, did he tweeze too much on his eyebrows? Like, everything just looked a little off. And you couldn't really pinpoint it.
But Joseph Gordon-Levitt does a fantastic job kind of like channeling Bruce Willis, because he basically gets all his mannerisms down, showing like who's the real actor here. You know, obviously Bruce Willis couldn't
go
the other way. But there's great world.
He can't tap dance and sing. And
there's a great world building here. It's funny and dark. There's basically almost like two movies here, and both work. The one in with the JGL future, and the one in the Bruce Willis future, both of which are equally compelling.
Yeah, that got a little.
I would love to see that story. I would love to see
that. Got a little dicey for me. I'm like, what exactly is going on here?
I like
that. That
montage.
But there was the montage was great.
Amazing.
But then that like almost parallel like, whoa, what is going on here?
Yeah, but I think you were the only one confused about that.
Untrue. You need a minute. Well, because I didn't want to just take that minute to think about it. It was like afterwards, it's like, and
you haven't read enough sci-fi stories. So
okay.
Penny, so I
Jesus.
Actually, you were actually excited because, like me, you're a big fan of Rian Johnson's. You're a big fan of Joseph
Gordon-Levitt.
I'm a big sci-fi fan. So what'd
and
you
I
think
don't
of
like
Looper?
Bruce Willis. No, I'm kidding. I really liked it. So I think the way I set up for Judge Dredd was purposeful, because Looper is a genre film. It is sci-fi, very heavily sci-fi influence, but I feel like it has a wider appeal than a Judge Dredd. Like, Judge Dredd felt more niche than a Looper. I feel like Looper, someone could still appreciate it because it has that Inception feel, obviously not in that grandiose way.
It's a different kind of sci-fi film, in the sense that how 2001 A Space Odyssey was a different kind of sci-fi film than, say, Blade Runner.
Blade Runner is
one of my all-time
favorite
movies.
Right. That's what I mean, though. I feel like, but I mean, you've also named like two super like critically acclaimed
seminal
films.
Works in that genre.
But I'm saying But for most people who are just casual moviegoers, a lot of them probably didn't see Blade Runner. Okay, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe.
No, I think you're right. Yeah.
But you know what I mean? So anyway, what I was trying to get at is that Looper does have that larger mass appeal because it deals with... The crux of the story isn't like, oh, it's super sci-fi. I mean, this it gets into real life and decisions that you make in life and where you are in your life. When you're young, you have certain priorities versus when you're older.
Well, yeah, I mean, it could basically be summed up like this. There's two characters.
But neither of them are wrong.
No. Yeah, it could be summed up like this. Like I said before, there's two movies because there's two characters. What I really liked about this film is that there's young Joe and old Joe, right? Same character, but they both hate each other.
Right, which I find hilarious. Yeah,
young Joe's like, look at this old loser. I don't want to become him. And old Joe's like, man, I can't believe I was this idiot.
Right, I was this dumb. Yeah. And I was just so naive.
They both have their own priorities. They both have their own things they're trying to do. And that's what makes this film really work.
It's funny because it's almost...
Because they both have their totally separate goals.
Right. But it's almost like a father and son relationship, even though it's the same guy.
Same person, yeah.
He knows that he's going to grow up like this.
Yeah.
And he knows that he was this.
Yeah.
So it's just funny because they even try and, like, one-up each other when,
yep.
like, when they were going to meet and then... Anyway, I don't want to give too much away, but it was just a funny scene with Beatrix and Jen. And
And what's interesting is that I like how they don't really try to explain how time travel works because there's a crap load of paradoxes that we won't go into because they'll spoil the film. But honestly, a lot of this film makes no sense when you really think about it.
But you know what, though? For a lot of the
face value... But it does a really
good
job.
Well, that's what I mean. For a lot of the face value stuff, it's fine.
Yes.
It's fine.
The issue is
like,
that...
Like, if you want to dig a little bit deeper, then yes.
No.
There are things that don't make sense.
The only way to explain it is that there's multiple timelines. So the future is not necessarily written.
Right.
So
and it's not
this
necessarily...
This can happen to this character, but...
One... It's not linear.
Yeah.
It's not linear.
Yeah, they did a fantastic job early on with Paul Dano's character.
But I think that's what...
That's an amazing, job,
well,
which really shows
I thought that
you.
Was cool, because showing that character and how... time can change and things like that. It was interesting.
But that brings a paradox, because if...
I know where you're going with this without giving it away.
Yeah, okay.
And I totally understand what you mean by paradox, and we're not going to spoil it. I mean, it's probably within, the first half hour.
No, but basically, that, for me, that... this is in the first 20 minutes. Something happens to Paul Dano's character. Paul Dano's character is another looper, who's Joseph Gordon-Levitt's best friend.
Right.
But basically what happens to his character, and apologize for being cryptic, because we don't want to give it away, because it's amazing, kind of discounts or contradicts what happens to Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character. We'll take that off air, because I don't want to get into it. With the quote-unquote ending of the movie.
Right.
So for me, it contradicts that, what happens.
I don't know if it... Okay, so
unless
maybe you have to give me more
information. Unless there's parallel timelines that...
Well, but that's what I mean.
Where,
like,
all these characters can exist in one place. So whatever happened to Paul Dano's character,
because
Paul Dano is still fine in another world or whatever.
Right. Well, and I think that's the thing. I mean, there's different ways to look at this film, especially one thing that they say that kind of sticks with me and maybe it makes it okay in my brain, is that there's two scenes, and it happens twice, where... the big boss guy said to Joseph Gordon-Levitt's young Joe, saying, you know, I saw you and I saw your bad path, and I want to change it to the good path. So it's almost as if that bad path can keep going forward as a one path in life, and then the good is perhaps what you're seeing, or perhaps you're living in the bad. You know what I mean? So I feel like those are two parallel worlds that may or may not be happening.
It's a little difficult because...
And hence... I know, and I don't want to give it away, but that's what I was thinking.
But it kind of contradicts because of the name of this film and what the name is.
I know,
about
and
Looper.
You're
about
closing a loop.
Anyway, okay.
I get it.
But yeah,
but that's
I really
the thing.
Like...
When you start getting into it, then that's where it's like, well, is it this or is it that? But it's questionable, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing, and it just means it's not answered, but it doesn't... I don't think it totally contradicts it, because it doesn't give you a solid yes or no.
Okay, so...
versus the Doctor Who episode, which they totally contradicted, and it was bad.
That
actually upset me, because it was very unclear and made a lot of things moot.
I think I agree with you on that, but it was that Doctor Who episode was amazing. So yep, let's get into the acting. Joseph Gordon-Levitt is Joe. This guy can do anything, honestly.
He can.
He really can. He can ride a bike. He can do film noir.
He can ride
a bike.
He can walk.
He can have cancer.
He can walk and talk at the same time.
And he can be a looper.
Which is awesome.
Fantastic job. And again, he captures Bruce Willis's mannerisms.
You know what else,
so
Josh?
Well.
I think he probably puts his pants one leg at a time.
Now, Bruce Willis plays a fantastic old Joe, who's a world-weary character that sees his old, younger self as an idiot, and he has his own goals. He does a really good job there. Again, Paul Dano's in it, Piper Perabo, Jeff Daniels is fantastic. I love his line.
Yeah, I do.
Go to China. He's like, I want to go to France. I'm from the future. Go to China.
Yes.
I love that line. And Emily Blunt is there. Now, we're not going to give anything away because that's what I said. I don't know if we talked about this, Penny.
She looked good.
Yeah, but the trailers, the marketing do a fantastic job not showing you how this movie is really two movies. First half
I
and the second
no
half.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Oh, okay.
Because of what happens with the Rainmaker. They don't show any of that. And I think they do a really, really good job about this. Because while this is a sci-fi movie, this is also, in a lot of respects, a kind of like backwards coming-of-age story.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they do a really, really good job about this. So, yeah, wrapping it up. I give this one a Bring Your Lunch From Home because you do not want to miss this one. It's one of the smarter sci-fi movies I've seen
agreed.
In a very long time. Maybe since Inception, I guess.
Yes, agreed.
I can't
ditto.
Even think of any other smart sci-fi movies recently.
Man, I want to watch Inception again.
But yeah, definitely check it out. It'll
I think
really,
I did watch it twice already.
And as you hear
the second time around, you do find more flaws.
And as you hear Penny and I talking back and forth about this a lot, that shows you how this movie Looper will, you know, it's very thought provoking, and you know, for better or worse, if you find faults in it or not, it'll leave you with a lot of questions and a lot of answers that you want to answer. So yeah, Bring Your Lunch Home. How about you, Penny?
I said that ditto.
Alright, so ditto means Bring Your Lunch Home because you won't miss this one. Alright, so that is our review of Looper. Wrapping it up, Dread 3D, we both give it a Bring Your Lunch From Home
because
you don't want to miss this one, saying that everybody should
watch
it.
Why do I even show up if you're just going to change my rating?
And Looper, we also both give it a Bring Lunch from Home because you don't want to miss this one. Two of my most anticipated films in the year, and two that did not disappoint. And yeah, it was a really good 2 weeks, especially considering like Resident Evil was last show or whatever. You know, it's been a very good 2 weeks. All right, with that out of the way, let's move right on to the end of this week's show. We would like to thank everyone for joining us for another episode of the Cinema Cafe podcast. Now, before we get to which movies we're reviewing for the next show, here are the upcoming new movie releases for the next 2 weeks, starting with October 5th. Liam Neeson's back as one of the greatest modern-day action heroes in Taken 2, Taken with a Vengeance.
This is going to be bad.
It's going to be awesome.
It's just going to be bad because the expectations are too high right now.
Tim Burton returns to high expectations for a Taken movie.
Of course! People love that movie.
Tim Burton returns to his student film roots with his classic now feature-length film, Frankenweenie.
Looks so cute!
A Glee-type movie for, well, Glee fans. It's Pitch Perfect.
I thought that's already out. And
it's time to get pitch slapped. The Precious director returns at a story about small-town America and sex in The Paperboy. That movie looks fantastic.
Really good cast, too.
Nicole Kidman's looks
no
sexy
idea
as
what
hell
it's about.
In that movie.
Is it about a paperboy?
I don't think it's about a paperboy. Okay. He's a journalist. The horror anthology format returns in the indie hit VHS. Hugh Laurie stars in a romantic dramedy where he falls in love with his best friend's daughter
in
The Oranges.
Weird.
I really
want
to see
weird.
That. And lastly,
Liam Neeson.
Yeah, and lastly, the dark comedy about the butter carving competition in Butter.
Butter.
Now for the movies released on October 12th, Ben Affleck returns to the director's chair in the CIA period thriller in Argo.
Why couldn't you just say Ben Affleck in Argo and call it a day?
I mean, that actually does look good, too. But
yeah.
The Insidious and Paranormal Activity return. The director returns with the horror film Sinister. That actually looks really scary. Kevin James stars in another movie in Here Comes the Boom.
But James stars in another Kevin James movie.
You know what that means. And lastly, the comedy thriller that looks to be in the same vein as In Bruges in Seven Psychopaths. So, Penny, any that you're interested in seeing? Take It 2, obviously.
Yes.
Frankenweenie?
Yeah.
I really want
to get down with that.
I really want to see The Oranges. I will get a chance to see VHS. Okay. The Seven Psychopaths actually looks fantastic.
I only saw one preview for that, so I don't really know it enough.
I'll probably end up seeing Pitch Perfect.
Oh, it looks funny, right?
Yeah, I'll probably end up seeing Pitch Perfect. It has Sam Rockwell in it.
I do like him.
And John Malkovich.
And Colin Farrell? Or did I make that
no,
up?
No, Colin Farrell's not. He's in Bruges.
I know. So I thought he was in this.
All right. And I actually really want to see The Paperboy. I don't know when I get a chance to see that. All right. With that out of the way, if you have any comments or feedback, you can reach us at cinemacafepodcast@gmail.com. Also, remember to review the show on iTunes and check out our blog at cinemacafepodcast.blogspot.com. As always, my name is Joshua Liu.
This is Penny Lamb.
Have a great 2 weeks. Yeah, like I said in the beginning of the show, this is episode 98. Two more episodes before the big
one. And then we stop it altogether.
As also, I was saying at the beginning of the show, Penny, that I was looking at the files for the first episode. Do you know that we started the show in October 2008?
I feel like I do. But no, almost 4 years.
Almost 4 years. I mean, because it's been on and off.
Right.
Yeah, it's almost 4 years.
That's crazy. I remember the first movie we did.
I did too. I said it was Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist.
I know.
So there
that
you go.
That was bad. All right. We gave it a good rating.
It's all right. It's not a bad movie.
It's not.
I've seen that movie like 6 times already.
I don't watch movies more than once, typically.
Right. So yeah. And
except 21 Jump Street, clearly.
21 Jump Street. All right. And happy movie watching.